with episode 380 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and since once again Bronze Thumb could not be here to deliver this himself, I will do it in his stead. I didn't know that Sony had contracted with AMC to do a backdoor pilot for The Last of Us.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and, you know, I've never met Thor either.
Oh, but if only we had. I'm sure that we would be the envy of millions. I know that everybody is expecting us to talk about this little show. I believe there was some kind of anniversary that was going on. Some British show. I'm fairly sure it was Blackadder, but I may be wrong.
The Monty Python stuff?
That's the one, but I don't think it's actually come out yet. So, yeah, we're just going to have to go ahead and talk about some other things. Maybe a week from now. A little bit of advanced knowledge about that. I can't tell you how I know, but I think about a week from now we'll be talking about that particular event. But in the meantime, we have lots of things that we can talk about. And Edmund, I think that you need to give a disclaimer before we do that.
Absolutely. Our policy here is to talk about anything and everything about all of these episodes, so you will be hideously, horribly spoiled. But we try and wait a week or so we certainly hope you've had time to catch up.
That's right, and, well, we might as well just jump into that backdoor pilot for The Last of Us, the TV series, which I don't know about you, but I would like to see a lot more of. Let's go ahead and run the promo for The Walking Dead.
Hyundai presents scenes from the next episode of The Walking Dead.
Didn't find him.
I trailed my goal. Aren't you still angry about what he did?
He was here right now. I'd cut him in two, because that's how it needs to be.
Be careful. He's a sick man.
All right, and Gary, why don't you go ahead and read the recap and then take it away.
Yes, sir. We're talking about The Walking Dead, Season 4, Episode 6, Live Bait. A familiar face returns as the group members struggle to find humanity in a world of constant threats. I wasn't expecting this flavor of an episode, honestly. It doesn't surprise me, of course, we were going to have Governor time given his little teaser in the previous episode. To get so much of it seemed... I guess I liked it, really. You know, it showed that he wasn't this monolithic evil guy that... really is the only way he had been portrayed, at least towards the end of the last arc involving him. So yeah, it was nice to see that he does have a human side, that there is good to him, and this sense of overwhelming insanity that I guess came about him maybe from the pressure of leadership, the whole daughter being the zombie and then killed, had snapped him, and he's come back a little bit, much in the way that Rick I think sort of has, you know, come back from that edge a bit that we've talked about with him needing a break from everything. I guess this was the governor's break. And I enjoyed the quasi family that he sort of adopted, and generally I was pleased when it first started opening up as a Governor-centric episode. I wasn't thrilled with it, but by the end of it, I was happy that I had seen it. Hmm. What'd you guys think?
Edmund, go ahead.
I was rather intrigued at them, devoting this much time to it, and certainly the way they're setting it up, it seems like perhaps this is going to be the alternate arc for a little, even a little while, showing us how the governor reached that point of sitting outside the prison, I really did kind of enjoy it, although I agree with Gary that I think there's something very deliberate going on here of humanizing him and making him less of a just sort of complete villain the way he was by the end of the finale last season when he starts mowing down his own people, and this new little twist of sort of now putting him in, it seems at least from the ending of the episode, in opposition to his former compadres, or at least there's going to be some tension between them once they've actually hooked up again after they decided to abandon him. Certainly it was a big shift from what we've been seeing, but in reintroducing the governor this way, as opposed to him just sort of being the cackling villain outside the gates, I'm really kind of intrigued to see where they're going with this.
Well, I liked also that they gave us the journey. We started off with him still that obsessed, madman, for lack of a better term. And we saw how, the time alone sort of really, sort of broke him down, and where he was at a place where he could start to, come out of the darkness, if you want to call it that. It wasn't just a flick of the switch and he's, making nice with other people. We got to see him, basically get abandoned, deserted, burn down the whole town, which sort of gives us a reason why we never went back there. and then it shows him, basically, surviving on his own by himself with no real interaction if we put it back against the time of our main group, it's on the order of, 7 to 8 months at least. So I liked that they showed us the progression and didn't just fast forward his life on us.
Yeah, the question that I have, is exactly how much time has passed by the time that they are running back into his old companions? Because, he's had enough time to at least start thinking that he's living a different life. And one of the things that I really liked about this was just how, instead of having him have to face what he's done by running into the prison at the end of this episode, which is actually what I thought was going to happen, was that, whether it was some kind of thing where he runs, through the woods, and when he comes out, it's literally right, on the road to the prison. But then they took a little bit of a left turn, and instead of having to answer to Rick and the gang at the prison, he's having to answer to the survivors of his own people. And I find that a very interesting way to approach this. That if we are talking about someone that is perhaps, surprisingly, on a road to at least attempted redemption, I don't think he actually thinks that he can make up for the things that he's done. But if he is kind of on that road, then this is a logical step for them to take. That he has to convince the people that he wronged more than even the people at the prison first. And then he can kind of work it out. Of course, the downside to us knowing that he is eventually standing outside of the prison is that we know that he survives this encounter. Sure. The question is how many of the people that he's brought with him will survive this encounter? And what is that going to do to him? Because I can easily see that his chance to save these three girls is something of a way to make up...
Penance, maybe?
Yeah, penance for Penny.
yeah, absolutely.
And so if this whole encounter goes wrong and he loses the three of them as a result of it, that could be, that could whip him right back into the kind of madness that he was dealing with before. So it would almost be doubly tragic that he might have found his way. And we don't quite know if he actually does or not, but we're going to find out eventually. So I do kind of like the fact that they are showing us, as you said, Gary, this other side of the character. Now, the question I would pose to you guys is one of the main complaints that I think a lot of people had for this episode was, did they need an entire episode to go from A to B?
I liked it. As I mentioned in my earlier comments, I liked it. As we saw the flash forward with Rick and the main group, we almost felt we wanted more of the sort of filled in on how they got from welcoming the townspeople to where they are currently. Cheated might not be the right word, but just curious might be a better way to put it. And so it was nice that they didn't do that jump on us again with and took this different format. In this case, a much simpler format because you're basically dealing with one person's journey as opposed to multiple people. So no, I really liked it. What do you think, Edmund?
Yeah, no, I was. I'm with you. I think they did need to give him this much time to really show that journey. And I also agree with John that I do think they're setting this up for this or his second downfall in a way. That his chance is going to be protecting this new surrogate daughter and these women, and given the flash forward we've already had, it does seem almost a foregone conclusion that it's all going to go wrong somehow, and that's what drives him back to revenge. And I think for that sort of arc, we did need to see him really reaching rock bottom and then pulling himself out of it like this.
We need character investment. Yeah.
And also, I actually kind of liked this. There's another thing they're introducing now where this is like the third different group we've seen who have dealt with the zombie apocalypse in different ways. We had the crazy woman in the woods. We had the bizarrely unequipped young couple on the Rick and Carol's road trip, and now seeing this little family who have managed to hold out somehow in the same place thanks to confluence of circumstances. And there's been the talk of the spinoff, so I don't know if this is part of the writing staff's way of sort of playing around with different scenarios to sort of get themselves ready for spinning things off, but I know some people may complain about we should be following the main story arc, but I actually like them expanding the world and showing us different parts of it.
Well, it really, I'm we've seen the prison situation kind of degrade, and it got to the point where they are now at a bit of a crossroads. They are really having to ask the question of whether or not they can sustain being there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes sense that you'd take this now parallel course for at least an episode, if not more. And I get the sense that we're actually going to see a second episode like this just from the previews.
Yes, absolutely.
So it seems like what they're trying to do then is set things up for the mid-season finale, where we've seen how the prison has had to deal with this situation with the plague, and now we're going to see this parallel story that the governor took, which may or may not in some ways intersect with what was going on, but we need to kind of fill in that gap. And like you said, they're setting up the fact that he had this hope. Whether it was rightfully or not, did he really have the right to consider these, that girl to be his surrogate daughter or not? I mean, I think that they eventually kind of came to trust them enough through necessity or their own personality. Who knows? I mean, for all intents and purposes, he took over the role of the father that, or the relative at least, was it somebody from upstairs? I don't even know. I think it was a relative, but
I think it was the father. You're right.
I lost track somewhere along the line there. Yeah. I think he looked as old as he did because of the cancer, but
yeah.
Regardless, do I see this as a downfall? Maybe. Do I see this as it could be even more complicated, where we're seeing how he gains a new group to work with? And they do something that, whether it's threatening these girls, or this gives him some kind of base upon which to start to rebuild his idea of how things should work. And he, it's from that position that he goes back to the prison. And it's just that it's wide open. We don't know. What is he going back for? It was shown in a bit of a sinister light, but that was based on our assumptions. And I don't know that those assumptions are remotely correct right now. What I like about this, what I actually really love about this, is that there are so many people that absolutely thought this was the worst guy ever on the planet. In which case, hey, you guys really need to watch Game of Thrones. But they thought he was so despicable, especially after the last season. And of course he has this reputation from anyone who knows the comics, that they're really taking him in a completely different direction.
Oh yeah, it does not feel like the same character, yeah.
It feels like a better character. I mean,
that too.
I mean, it's just, this is the exact kind of thing that the writing staff has been trying to establish this season for the folks at the prison, fleshing out the characters that really had not been given enough attention over the first three seasons. And they're doing exactly the same thing with the governor. Instead of just, he was already somewhat complex in the third season, but this adds some depth to him. And sometimes adjust in some scenes that there wasn't even any dialogue. It was all just expression and body language. And you really got a sense of where his head was at just from the way that he was approaching the scenes and acting through them. So, certainly that was a great opportunity for David Morrissey to come right out and show just how much he was bringing to the character and to the role.
Oh, yeah. As an actor, he must have loved this episode.
Maybe not the beard.
Itchy.
Yeah, well, that's That could have been applied, so probably was.
Then it probably would have pitched worse.
but I'm realizing as you're saying this, I mean, even what I was just talking about was kind of making those assumptions of, you know, no, he's got to be sinister, he's got to be there for a bad purpose, and the way they've set him up now, it maybe he's out there because his old crew is getting ready to, you know, attack the prison because they're going to do it right this time, and he's there to warn them. Who knows? but certainly the way they've turned him around, it does kind of amaze me. But yes, I could actually come around to realizing, wait a minute, it could be something completely opposite to what we would expect. So,
the song that they were playing throughout the episode, though, is about the fact that there is no redemption for what one has done.
Well, yeah.
Chris. Well, you know, as we talk about him being this father figure and taking over this group, you know, I think he's doing it for his own internal redemption, not so much for the external people to accolade him so much as we're saying penance. It's his way to try and make good for all the bad he's done. So it's
and isn't that exactly how a character should be approaching the concept of redemption? It's not something that they talk about, that they put a label on, but it's just something that they do. I mean, we've talked about that
exactly
before.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was what I liked about it. And I acknowledge the fact that if someone was expecting this, especially after the intensity of the final act of the previous episode, to go from that to a fairly methodical and even lyrical character study, and one without not a whole lot of action, I can kind of understand why it was considered to be a bit slow. But I don't quite understand the way that it was being just the moaning and groaning and whining about it. Sorry, people that maybe felt that way, but even you have to admit, on the social media that evening, it was like they just showed Rick painting a wall and staring at it for an hour. It was the way that it was basically being described, and I didn't get that at all. Now, granted, I didn't watch it in real time. Unfortunately, folks, of all the... I was in a hotel room on Times Square, and it didn't have AMC. It didn't even have the CW. I don't get that, but
that's bizarre. Yeah,
it was bizarre. The channels.
Yeah, I've run into the no AMC thing, which astonishes me, especially now that we've got Walking Dead and Breaking Bad,
right?
Breaking, you know, cable ratings. But
so yes, I did wind up having to watch this on a no commercial basis, shall we say? But even so, I didn't feel like it was dragging that much. Because and maybe it is a difference of opinion. There are people that come to this show for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
For me, it has always been the character struggle. And it helps that I came into the show in the third season when more emphasis was being placed on the character development versus way of looking at it for a while.
Yeah, well, you also missed the season 2 farmhouse interlude, as some people think of it.
Well, I got to rip through that pretty fast, get it, that when the characters are that thin and you're trying to, and you have a dearth of action, I could definitely understand why people were getting frustrated, but...
And hey, I mean, he did burn down a town and, smashed a guy's head with a fire extinguisher. So
you say that like
oxygen
it's a
tank.
Oxygen tank.
The one that was being used to save his life.
Yes, that's right.
there's an irony to it.
Yes.
Let's see now. Gary, what would you give this one?
I'm going to give it an 8. It really stood out for me. I wasn't expecting the format. I thought the governor's story was compelling, and I was hanging on the episode, watching it unroll in nice anticipation of savoring a good Purdue show, and it was a good Purdue show. Obviously, the whole scene with the new family was a bit melodramatic at times, but like as I said, they're trying to have us invest in the character before they probably do something really awful to him, and it worked.
And Edmund, how about you?
I'll agree with the 8. I thought this was definitely an above average episode and an intriguing new storyline to open up.
Ooh, I have to think about this one. Yeah, I think I will also go with an 8. I was between an 8 and a 9 personally, but I do feel as though there were a few little things that they could have maybe done slightly better on the and to pick up the pace a little bit. Overall, though, it's still above average. The difference is merely subjective. All right. Let's see. Gary, what do you want to talk about next? Look down the list. Surprise me.
Fine, I'll surprise you. Let's talk about Almost Human.
Oh, wow. That is a surprise.
Neener, neener, neener.
Okay. Edmund, you up on that one?
Absolutely.
Excellent. So let's go ahead and run what I'm guessing is going to be more of a series promo than, advanced promo than it is an actual episode promo. Here you go. Almost Human.
Tell me what you remember.
It's an ambush!
I can't remember anything.
You were in a coma.
It's been 2 years. The people who ambushed you disappeared.
Warning.
You coming in?
Just give me one more day.
No, it's time, John.
I'm required to partner with the synthetic.
The idea behind this unit was to be as human as possible. Sad, really. Some of them had emotional issues.
So you're saying he's a basket case?
Detective John Kinnix. I'm Dorian.
Update your files. Let's go.
I haven't seen one of those synthetics for years.
Perfect. Two cops from the scrap heap.
There are other ways, Detective.
I'm questioning this man, not you.
I was made to feel as much as you. After all you've been through, if I were like you,
You're not like me.
Your problem is you don't know yourself.
The synthetic failed.
You don't trust anyone.
You're not like them. I don't know why, but you're not.
I should take that as a compliment.
You should.
Without you, I'm off the force.
Fantastic. I get the synthetic with the bleeding heart.
You'll thank me.
They killed my team, my friends. I'm the only one who survived. Now I know why.
All right, and Edmund, why don't you go ahead and do the recap for us, and then toss out what you think is probably the biggest thing to talk about for this pilot.
Absolutely. This is Almost Human, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Once again, the Oso original. In the premiere of this crime drama set in 2048 Los Angeles, John Kinnix, a veteran cop with mental and physical baggage, returns to the force, skeptical of the mandate that requires human officers to be paired with robots. But he's got to get used to it when his new partner is an android named Dorian. And, I guess the number one thing to throw out is kind of after all the excitement of the trailers, dealing with the fact that this, while it is in the near future, and I do like the way they were building the future world, this is feeling very much like a standard police procedural that just happens to have robots in it. The setup, the sort of, the damaged cop who's in the shootout where his partner gets killed and, he gets his leg blown off, it does feel like a lot of stuff we've seen before. And, so I really feel it's going to hang on the performances and the writing and giving us something, something that's more than just stock characters. And based on the pilot, I think there's potential there, but it wasn't blowing me away, but I was finding it perfectly enjoyable, but feeling a little too familiar. And certainly for a futuristic sci-fi show, that's not something we should necessarily be feeling. So that's my initial take. What do you guys think?
Well, it's ironic to me because I know exactly what you're talking about, but at the same time, I associated in my mind this concept in this show so much with the Isaac Asimov robot novels.
Right.
That is exactly what those novels were. They were effectively procedurals with a science fiction wrapper around it. So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing or disappointing because it was kind of what I was expecting. The other thing that was kind of odd, and forgive me again for kind of pointing out that I saw this under somewhat strange circumstances. It wasn't in my usual living room experience. It was at the hotel. Right. And I don't know if it's because they of a setting that they had or the type of TV that they had. And this is a bit of an aside, so... You know how there are some of the lower budget multi-camera shows from Britain where it almost looks like a soap opera type of thing where you can actually see the, you know, where the lighting is in the room,
mm-hmm.
and it looks a little too much like a stage performance?
Oh, yeah.
You understand what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like most of the, I mean, a completely different genre, but most of the BBC costume dramas from the 70s and early 80s.
Yes, where, exactly, where it looks almost like they are filming live on stage.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have any type of editing correction or post-production to try and make it look more cinematic. It looks just like you were, you know, right there in the room while they're performing. Whatever setting or type of TV that they had, every damn thing that I watched on that TV looked that way. It was the most disconcerting thing watching this show because I didn't realize it. It was the first thing that I turned on and watched. So as I'm watching it, I was incredibly distracted because I was thinking, is this some kind of like aesthetic choice that they made to make it like try to do like a cinema verite thing to make it look or feel more real to the audience by filming it this way? I couldn't wrap my head around what I was really seeing because it looked so weird the way that it was coming across on the TV. And it wasn't until after the fact that I realized, oh no, every single thing that I watch that's in HD is showing up that way, which is really bizarre. But and I tried to replicate it on my TV at home. I can't do it. So I don't know if it's some kind of weird like frame rate thing.
Like, yeah. They're crossing through PAL and then it comes back.
I don't know. I started wondering like, okay, I've got a plasma in my living room. Would it be like the difference between watching it on that and watching it on an LCD where the like a really cheap one or something? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I just have to say that my experience, and the reason I'm bringing this up is that my experience of the show was very much wrapped in that because I was just having a hard time reconciling what I was seeing because it was being presented in a very odd way. And I actually did try to change the settings on the TV. It didn't work. But that said, wrap that around the fact that they also had many scenes that were done clearly with a handheld camera. So it was like adding that layer on top of it that some scenes just, I was literally watching it and I could tell where the lighting was when they were filming it and things like that. It just really threw me off. And one would say, like, why does that even matter? Well, when you're so distracted by things like that, it can be hard to pay attention to the finer details of a pilot. Because you're trying to get the characters, you're trying to get the premise down, and there's this just weird filter that you now have to see this all through. Never mind the fact that I was a bit exhausted as well. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and here I thought you were going to say you were watching it in a hotel in Times Square, and the view outside your window was too close to the
to the scenery.
Yeah, right. No.
Since they were going with the now universal thing since Blade Runner, that in the future there are always huge billboards that go up entire buildings.
Well, you guys did see the pictures that I posted from my hotel room, so yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only slightly disconcerting to see the dude from Grimm staring at you from outside. But, anyway.
What do you mean you only gave my show an 8 out of 10?
That's right. But at any rate, no. I wound up just surface things, right? I mean, I enjoyed the way that they were introducing things, but I do admit that it felt very much like a standard pilot for this kind of show. Carl Urban brought it.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed his thing. But again, his character being introduced in a very stock, somewhat cliche way. I mean, the dude with trauma, dealing with, you know, losing a partner. It was under the circumstances that are wrapped into the new partner that he gets, yada, yada, yada. I feel like it was just establishing a starting point so that they could then explore things a bit more in the first few episodes, which is typical for this kind of show. And this is exactly why I usually wind up giving pilots somewhere around a 6 or 7. Usually closer to a 6, because there's just a lot of exposition involved. And because of that, there wasn't a whole lot happening in this episode that was memorable. I remember the performances. I remember that it looked really strange, and I was hoping that wasn't going to be the way the whole show was. And to be honest, the plot, I don't remember much about it at all. It was that just standard. It was a pilot. That's what it was for me. But I mean, a lot of the aesthetics, you know, I was expecting it to be a bit further into the future. The fact that it was only, say, 30 years ahead was a nice touch, because from a storytelling standpoint, there's a lot of things that you can do with that, because you don't have to keep establishing some of the background, because it is effectively our world, just a little further ahead. So you can still use things that we understand as a society. And just add to it, just tweak it, which, you know, is a helpful thing from a storytelling perspective, but it's all in how you execute that. But I've gone on long enough. Gary, what did you think of this?
I agree. There was so much stereotypical damaged cop and chief, sergeant, lieutenant / you know, immediate supervisor looking out for them, or at least on their side. Throughout it, I was starting to be a little disappointed generally, as Carl Urban did bring in a really good performance, but it was just so trite that I was concerned. The only thing that sort of saved me a little bit was when he threw out his first what's the word we're going to look for? Android, I believe, is what they like to go by, or synthetic, as he called them. And I like the idea that word that we would find somewhat innocuous synthetic is a derogatory term, at least to the androids. So that was nice, and throwing his first android out of the car was nice too, although I was surprised there weren't more repercussions for it. But those two things were promising. But like you said, it was even you want to say, oh, it's a pilot and they're building the world, so they don't have time to really advance story. But how much of this world do they really have to build? I came away almost feeling ripped off might be too strong a sentiment, but you know, I felt like they were lazy, that they really should have introduced a little, actually done some more world building. This was so stereotypical that I didn't feel we got that. And while we might talk later on about future episodes and how they might have improved, this one really left me flat. I started to say, oh, I like this. And then I realized, wait a minute. No, I like this in 3 other shows. I don't know if I'm going to like this setup in this show. I think I was even less optimistic about it than you were, John. It seemed very hacked, put together, and virtually not original at all. So I was disappointed.
Okay. Let's see. Is there anything? I mean, maybe it's. I think you're basically maybe looking at it the other side of what I was talking about, where I was saying that at least they give themselves a few avenues with the storytelling by having a world that's fairly familiar to our own, just with a few futuristic tweaks. But you kind of give the other side of it, that because it is so familiar, they didn't really add so much to it. And
well, no, it's not only that, but I mean, it's the whole setup. Disgruntled cop coming back to prove himself, given a quirky sidekick. The only guy who's really in his court, you know, is the head of the department. The other people look down upon him, thinks there's something not right with him, or he shouldn't be there. And there's a large criminal organization that's responsible for why he's in the situation that he's in. You know, gosh, you know, this is like RoboCop, Total Recall. You know, you can rattle off the number of different times this, at least what they set up in the pilot, has been introduced to us. And I felt that they really should have done some more world building. I don't feel like I got anything new out of this pilot that I couldn't find in a dozen other places. There was no original idea or twist to it that I felt we got.
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know that I disagree.
Yeah.
But I usually kind of give pilots a little bit of a pass. Little bit.
Well, no, I know what you're saying, but yeah. they need some little twist to make it their own, so to speak. And even in the pilot, there should be some unique core piece to it. And I didn't feel that had it. Or if one of you saw something that you felt was, you know, original or unique, I'd love you to point it out to me, because I didn't see it. And I wish I did, because that's part of disappointing. You know, as I start to see the previews, you had an idea. Yeah, you know, it's going to be an android and he's going to be a cop. So you sort of took some of that to begin with. But, you know, a show needs to have its own little twist. And this didn't have it. Maybe it will in the next episode or a few episodes down the road. But it needed its own thing to say, oh, okay, this is almost human. But you could write this without names, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to tell me what show it's from.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm not going to be able to argue with you, because, again, I took away the fact that there wasn't much of a plot in this pilot. It was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was,
now the visuals were great, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was a sort of generic terrorist attack that yes, we do find out is linked back to the attack that took him out, and you know, and the I guess a big revelation that his long lost girlfriend is in fact involved, but certainly all of that, you know, also felt, you know, like stuff we've seen before. I guess in my case, one of the things that I'm sort of willing to give it a little more slack with is the fact that it is a very good cast. We've mentioned Carl Urban, Michael Ealy, I thought did a very good job as Dorian, and certainly the what Gary mentioned, I mean that whole thing of tossing his first, I think it's Max that they call the newer ones, the more robotic sidekicks, I took that as confirmation of yes, him having these superior officers on his side, because I'm sure in most circumstances if you did that you'd be right back on leave again or suspended,
especially since they say they don't have any spares. I was like
so
he's back a day, he destroys a major piece of equipment and
yeah,
nothing.
And but of course the cast can only be as good as its script, so they have assembled a very good cast, and another generic element, of course, you know, is the other people in the squad room, you know, where yeah, you've got the one guy with the big chip on his shoulder, and of course the very attractive female cop who's in his corner and will probably be a love interest down the road. So yeah, at the moment they're not pushing themselves enough was the impression I got from the pilot, and we can maybe put it down to pilotitis and them wanting to keep things a little more recognizable for the general viewer, and us being people who, you know, do know Isaac Asimov's Caves of Steel and things like that, are going to be a little disappointed, and I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed that they start doing better. Well, we are talking about people who are involved with Fringe here, and we all know how some people thought at the beginning of Fringe, so let us hope we're going in a similar direction.
Yes, well, Henry gave this one a 7 out of 10. Gary, I have a feeling that we're going to get a somewhat lower number from you, so let's start there.
Yeah, it's not like I haven't been critical of this show already, but no, I'm going to give it a 5, sort of right in the middle. I really don't think it deserves any real accolades because it didn't show me any.
And Edmund, how about you?
Between 6 and a 7, and I think I will give it a 6, because I think it could have and should have been better.
Yep, I'm sticking to my default. but I do agree. I mean, this is one of those shows that I could easily see kind of building on what they've started with and moving forward, but I also see this as a potential revolution situation. And I'm hoping that's not what it turns into. episode.
Even that was a much more original idea. I mean,
just someone just groaned in the background when I said that. Or is that a cat?
That was a cat.
Okay, then.
No, that was me.
Oh, okay.
Pretending I was my cat.
Hey, you don't have to still watch it for the team the way I do. I don't want to hear it.
All right, well, that wraps up that one. You know what? We did this last time. It worked out pretty well. Edmund, surprise me. What are we going to talk about next?
Oh, well, let's see. I think we've all seen the movie, so let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay, not a problem. So, in that case, Gary, why don't you do the recap and take it away?
Sure.
Oh, wait, we got to do hold on. We got to do the promo first. Let's get that out of the way.
Hope it doesn't spoil the movie.
The epic adventure that began in Thor: The Dark World continues in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All new next Tuesday, when the power of the gods,
whoever wielded the staff got superhuman strength,
falls into the hands of mere mortals. It sets the stage for Rage.
Something's wrong with Warren.
Tell me how to fix it.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Watch an all-new episode live next Tuesday at 8, 7 central on ABC. And see full episodes on Watch ABC Online.
Okay, Gary, go ahead.
I'll try not to spoil the movie as we go through this episode. I just want to say. Anyway, we're talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, Episode 8, The Well. A crossover episode with Thor, The Dark World, finds the agents dealing with the aftermath of the film's events, which pose a danger to one member of the team. I can't imagine how you could sync a movie and an episode of a television series better together than they did on this episode. We had the least amount of movie exposure that we've ever seen in a S.H.I.E.L.D. episode. I think we had one line where we usually get about three to say either Avengers, Battle of New York, or, geez, what's the alien race? Chitauri. Chitauri. And we got even less in this episode, which was supposed to be a movie tie-in than we get in the regular season.
I was
wondering
how you thought that we were going to be spoiling the movie talking about the episode. Because
I was being facetious. Okay, then. It was so bad. I mean,
it was the same location.
All the hype we got, I was half expecting Hemsworth to walk in at some point.
I hear he's dreaming.
I hear he's magical. Anyway, So this was a big letdown for me. I wasn't sure how they were going to link it, but to basically make the guest character of the week turn out to be Asgardian and never have met Thor seemed one of the more tenuous connections they could possibly have gone for, and quite frankly was disappointing. They did not need to go to this route, I thought, but I don't know if it'll I can't imagine it actually did generate extra ratings for them or encourage people to see the movie, but who knows? Maybe other people's mileage is different.
Yeah, it didn't do much in terms of the ratings of the show anyway.
No,
I didn't think so. Because as they've mentioned to us before, this show series is supposed to stand on its own and not be a superhero venture. But I guess they forgot that somewhere along the lines this week. So let's skip that aside a little bit and dive into the episode. I know a lot of people did have problems with this episode. It seemed okay. It was in a sense a little bit more superhero-ish than the typical S.H.I.E.L.D. episode has been. But I actually thought they came to a decent balance with it. We start off again with, this mysterious artifact of the week that turns out to be an Asgardian staff that's broken into three pieces. Coulson, who seems to know everyone in the world and universe, knows an Asgardian specialist. And I guess given the whole earlier introduction of Coulson with Thor's hammer, so I could see how he would know an Asgardian specialist. That, for me, I thought was a nice sort of link into the movie world a little bit, where, of course, Coulson, would know about Asgardian things. He was there with the hammer, so we'd understand that. And that type of movie tie-in and sort of link to the bigger universe works for me. This idea that the guy turned out all of a sudden to be Asgardian started to stretch things, but then again, we have to accept that there are people like this in the world, so... I thought the premise was somewhat reasonable as they went through. I do like the idea that that these artifacts can have effects on you, bring anger out, as was the case in this episode. I'm curious how they're going to play the whole this anger stays with you type of reference and vibe that they did play off for us, but I'm curious if that's going to go away in another episode or two. This doesn't seem like the show, the type of show that does carry those sort of long-term repercussions with itself. The show often seems to reset itself every week to a large extent, so I'm curious if they will actually start to have these sort of ongoing plot lines carry through the rest of the season. Did you guys think that was believable? Because I like it that the story doesn't sort of reset itself every week. The plane's not fixed or something like that, but I don't know if they're going to go through with it.
Evan, how about you?
I mean, to that last point, I mean, I hope they do. Certainly there was, that was laid out, and, I mean, to jump all the way to the end, having May leave the door open and, that whole strong suggestion that they were, comparing notes and, yes, maybe comforting each other, but was taking things in an interesting direction, especially for a show that's on at 8 o'clock and they're presumably trying to keep sort of PG-13. But as far as the rest of the episode, I guess there were a couple of things that got to me. I really like Peter McNichol as an actor. I mean, I have for years and years, of course. And and you don't like to type someone physically, but it seemed to me that all these Asgardians we've seen through the movies have been sort of big strapping fellows. So it was I was finding it a bit of a stretch seeing him as the warrior who got left behind.
Well, I thought they did a decent job explaining that. Just sort of they needed people, and he was sort of gave the impression like he was sick of his job. So he's like, why not?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The other thing I could say about that though is that I actually kind of liked the idea. I thought they played it up a little too much. I liked the idea that there's thousands of Asgardians. I mean, okay. You don't even have to have seen the second movie to know this. I mean, it's in the first movie, too. There's a lot of people in Asgard.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we see the big, the big folks, the name folks, Thor, mm-hmm. Sif, mm-hmm. Loki, the Warriors 3, Odin. These are the people that we expect to be the best of the best. But there's going to be, the dumpy ones that are just kind of hanging out. And I could totally imagine that, yes, from the standpoint of the fact that he's an Asgardian, he is more powerful and has different abilities than a human would, because that's his species, but that he would be the equivalent of, a librarian.
Right.
I'm sure that the typical Asgardian, shopkeeper could wipe the floor with most human beings, but probably compared to Thor, looks like he's, Giles.
Yeah.
So, to me, that actually was a really interesting touch, and it would have been a nice way to open up the idea that, there's this guy, he's an expert on Asgardian stuff because he's kind of an expatriated Asgardian.
Right.
And there may be more of them out there.
Yeah,
you have
that's
no
true.
Idea, but this kind of limited that a bit, which was a bit disappointing on my end, and I just wanted to jump in on that before we go with the topic.
No, absolutely. And go ahead, Gary.
No, I was going to say that would have been an interesting take on the character, sort of portray how Coulson's often, pretty worldly and matter of fact about things. I know this specialist. Oh, what makes him so special? He's from there or something. Just some offhand quip, and then and then we're moving on. So that, I think it would have played even better that way, and we still could have had the surprise at the end of, or not at the end, but in the middle where he's going after part of the staff as well. That still would have worked. Yeah.
I thought it would have given him, actually, now that you bring that up, Gary, I thought that motivation would have made sense, because he could have simply been someone from Asgard that left because he felt he was out of place, and this would have been his way to gain power to fit in with his own people. You could have really mined that a lot.
Well, no,
instead, in a different way.
Well, no, but I liked how they made the artifact be not necessarily something that's desired. It imparts power, but as a common thing is, but there's a price for it. And I didn't mind that trope brought out with it, and it makes sense of why he sort of broke it up, because he wasn't a trained warrior. He was something from, like, they call them berserkers, who, when you held this staff, like, just so totally enraged you that thankfully they didn't make the Wolverine reference, but you know, that you just start, you know, really violently attacking people as a result of having this item. And he didn't like that, and he didn't want anyone else to have to go through that, and that's why he'd broken it up. And so I thought the premise was, well, as I said, a lot of people thought, you know, thought it was a little weak, but I thought it was well thought out. It's, you know, it's maybe not typical comic book trope, but it fits well within the genre.
Yeah, and actually thinking back on it, I mean, the one thing that was kind of annoying me earlier on in the episode, that, you know, once his origin came out, it explained it, which was, okay, yeah, so he knew where to find the staff, and then he's walking down the street with it poking out of his bag. But,
it's a little longer than he remembered.
with it being explained that no, he's not really a trained warrior, so. Yes, he would, of course, accidentally bump into the very people looking for it.
Well, yeah. You know, I guess now we know what happened to the people on Alphas when, at the end of that show. But at any rate, someone will get that in the audience, I'm sure. The other thing that I wanted to say, too, is that I kind of liked the Men in Black vibe that Coulson's comment about, you know, oh, you know, If he had known, you know, that there were Asgardians kind of hanging out on the planet, versus the twist in this particular episode, I think that actually might have helped give the show a little bit more to work with. That they're not just dealing with technology that's around, but it's like, yeah, you know what? There are aliens around. And we know that too. Because at this point, shouldn't they kind of suspect that?
Oh, yeah.
But at any rate...
just because they finally went public, you know, you would think for an organization like S.H.I.E.L.D. and governments in general, it would be like, well, okay, so you mean really we really have been visited over the centuries, as all those nuts keep saying?
Yeah, I really felt like this was an episode with a few missed opportunities, not the least of which was, of all the ways to tie into the film, this felt really weak to the point that, as you were saying, Gary,
it wasn't tied into.
I know exactly. That's what I'm saying. To your point, they literally did not have to have any connection to the film in any way, shape, or form for this episode to have existed exactly the way that it did.
Mm-hmm.
There's.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, just for those who, you know, well, we said we don't want to give away too much, but them basically going in as the janitorial crew was not exactly the strongest pitch.
Well, basically, they were damage control. Gary, you'll get that before.
Oh, I always like that series.
Yes, but at any rate, and I keep on saying that, it's a magical place. I'll get to that part in a second. But no, other than just a few stray lines of dialogue at the very beginning of the episode, just to establish that it was after the events of that film, there was no reason for this story to have needed to be. And maybe, again, that's something that they did because early on they weren't, you know, they're still trying to figure out how best to do this. So they wanted to just tack it on to a story that they had already been thinking of doing anyway. I don't know, but it just, for an episode that was going to be that hyped up, it felt like a huge lost opportunity. And there were so many little things in the episode that felt like they could have done something more with, especially when there are lingering consequences to the point where they were kind of hinting at relationships forming and a completely different one has now formed. Not that I can particularly blame them, but, you know, Ward and May finding a connection was not expected, but okay. Good for him. And then of course we get that scene at the very end where, I don't know if that's a dream, a memory, an implanted memory, what that's supposed to be, but I kind of liked it.
Well,
especially the dollhouse reference.
Of course. When you said implanted memory, I was like, okay, am I supposed to just let that lie? Or should
No, that was it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was asking for a crumb, and that's what that was, and I was happy with it, yes.
Ask for a bigger crumb next time, will you?
I suppose I'll have to, but yeah. No, I mean, I was saying I wanted something, some new piece of data other than, you know, the line that Coulson always spits out. So now we got at least a little something fresh to chew on for a while. So,
yes, a seemingly very pleasant nightmare, apparently. Or at least something that makes you wake up in a cold sweat. So,
it would be somewhat ironic if Tahiti wound up being what was left of the dollhouse technology from the from the other set. Although many people have guessed that it's something along those lines. But anyhow, let's see. Gary, what would you give this one, do you think?
I'm going to give it a 7. It was reasonably good. It was a letdown with the movie tie-in. It was okay. There was nothing that great. There were some shockers, of course, but that's what they felt like. They felt like shockers, and they didn't really feel like they sort of naturally came about, which, like, for example, the Mayan Ward thing. You know, it's there, but it just still came out of left field for me, so I'll go with the 7.
All right, Edmund?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the 7 as well, more on the basis of some good, some bad, and it all meanders out to an average. Basically, I mean, I thought Peter McNichol was a highlight, and having the staff just creating sort of generic villains who have no real character development, so they're just there for our heroes to knock down, was not necessarily the greatest way to go.
I'm going to go with a 6.
I
just
see.
Felt like there were a lot of missed opportunities here. And much like the previous episode, I feel like they kind of went the easy route with some things. And granted, this didn't have the really gratuitous, nonsensical stuff that was going on at the hub, but it still felt like there were things that could have been done to enhance the show, but instead they really kept their kept things very narrow. So I feel like this is a bit of a below average for my purposes kind of episode. I can only hope that they can bounce back. I mean, the problem is that coming out of the gate a little bit rough has not been doing it any favors. And even though this is a Disney show and therefore ABC is not paying a huge amount of money in terms of licensing for it, it's not a cheap one either. So I'm getting mildly concerned that not really hitting it out of the park is becoming a bit of an issue. They've dropped precipitously since that premiere. And it's not in the complete danger zone yet, but it certainly is making people rumble a little bit.
Well, that's a good point, John. I'd never considered that, you know, as they have properties like this and have to license it, their licensing fees are probably zero. So, you know, that is something they can kick back into production budgets and maybe even guest stars and stuff like that. That might keep the show going longer. No, geez, I should have prescribed its death already. But, you know, it definitely is something where they're probably going to be able to hold out a lot longer with a show like this than they might another show.
Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...